Hello, everyone. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This is a fun Friday episode with Esmeralda Leone. Esmeralda is someone you might know if you've ever listened to this show. You may know her if you listen to late night radio in Chicago. She's a good person, and you can hear her every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. on WGN Radio. Co-host of this show for a very, very long time. I wanted to talk to her about not getting sick because she has one of those jobs where she has to use her voice. And then because this is You, Me, Them, Everybody in the year 2016, it devolves into drag race talk. So without further ado, here's Esmeralda and I just talking on a Friday. Good for a Friday podcast.
I wanted to talk to you about getting sick and talking into a microphone because you have a job to me that screams, I'm going to be sick in a microphone all of the time.
Right. And actually, that's it's happened a few times.
Okay, so if you've listened to this show, you probably know who Esmeralda is. If you don't, you might have heard her on the radio, most likely late at night or very early in the morning. You're on air every Monday through Friday from, what is it, 11 p.m. to 6 a.m.?
10 to 5.
10 to 5, okay. Just as bad. It just screams like, oh, there's no way I'm going to maintain a healthy body.
I mean, you can. I'm more the sick isn't my problem. I could be sick. My problem is when it affects my voice. So if I have a stuffy nose, even if I have a stuffy nose, that's fine. My voice will be a little different, but it's when it goes into my throat and then I've lost my voice a few times, even before I started working professionally in radio. I lost my voice and I had laryngitis, and it was the most frightening thing ever. It's even more frightening when I actually have a job that requires me to talk, because it's like, oh, wow, I can't work.
So have you had to call off of work? Like, have you lost money because of your illness?
I went into work that day. I had my voice was at it was ridiculous, but it was to the point where it was a few hours before I had to go to work and I couldn't call off. Like, I wasn't about to. I was like, I can't put anybody in that position where they have to come running because my voice is almost gone. And I almost pulled it off. In the end, the news people were like, just give me the traffic and I'll do it because you sound frightening.
That being said, I would also think that because you guys are sharing microphones, they really don't want you coming in.
It's still a working business and there's still people that come in and they're sick. There's, there's a lot of wet wipes. We buy rubbing alcohol to wipe down stuff. You know, we have sprays and all that, disinfectant sprays and things. So people freak out. Like, you tell everybody, like, hey, I'm sick. Just so you know, I've wiped down all of this. But if you want to, you can wipe it down again or whatever.
Has a guest ever gotten you or anybody else in the studio sick?
Oh, that I don't know, because I'm never in the studio with everybody else. Which is kind of nice, because if I am sick, I'm isolated.
You have done and you consistently use, or not consistently, but you still use a neti pot.
Yeah, I should use it more, because my issue now is not being sick. I have allergies too now.
When did you get allergies?
I don't know, like starting 2008, I guess. I don't know, the doctor told me it's allergies, but they don't know what it is. I guess I have to go to one of those people to poke my arm.
Yeah, you're fine. You'll just be sick for another like 4 years and it'll go away.
But yeah, I get a stuffy nose, or my sinuses. It's more sinus related. So the neti pot really helps with all that stuff.
Okay. I thought you weren't supposed to use a neti pot on a consistent basis, because doesn't it also make your immune system weaker?
No, it's actually, I mean, all it is just salt water. It's like salt water and baking soda or something like that. The mix is, you know, to the point where it shouldn't, it's pretty weak. And all it does is just clean out your nasal passages.
Does it feel good?
I like it, because sometimes when you blow your nose, like, weird stuff comes out.
Like, what kind of weird stuff?
Not weird stuff per se, but, you know, like, if you've been out outside for all day, and then you come in and you do a neti pot, like just a bunch of like black stuff comes out because of dirt and dust. And I mean, you have that in your nose. It's your if you have, I think your nose hairs are supposed to catch all that. And I mean, you ever blown your nose and there's just like dark spots and things?
No.
I don't know. I guess I breathe too much. I don't know.
That really makes me both want to do a neti pot and never do a neti pot.
Yeah. Well, the one I do, it looks like a teapot.
Yeah.
And it goes through one nose and out the other. But then there's some that you squeeze violently into your nose and then it shoots out the other nostril.
Yeah, I'm good.
Which I haven't done that one. I like the calming neti pot. And then what you do, and this I always thought my mother was insane. So when you're pouring the water into your nostrils, you're supposed to at some point snort some in, because then that hits some other nasal cavity passage or whatever that you can't get normally. And so, yeah, it just hit something different. And my mom would always, if I had a cold, she'd always tell me to snort a little bit of salt water. And I'm like, that's insane and it hurts. But it was kind of, it was along the same lines. It's just that, you know, the proportions of salt to water were a bit strong. Yeah. But yeah, it would clean your nasal passages out.
Oh, God. I feel disgusting and immune to all illness right now.
Surfers apparently do that too. Like when they're in the ocean, they'll snort some water up.
I was in the, I went snorkeling for the first and most likely only time in my life. And nothing, I just can't imagine willingly shoving your face in salt water and sucking it in, because I just wanted to do the opposite.
Well, I mean, you do one nasal passage at a time.
I guess that makes way more sense.
You don't go all in.
Oh, God.
That'd be a little much. No, you have to do one at a time.
I'm looking for the listener at home, where we do this over Google Hangouts in the video, and I get to see inside of her apartment. And you have a CD tower.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm proud of my CD tower. Okay. I've lugged that thing for years.
Okay, just because you've had it forever doesn't mean you need it. When is the last time you actually took one of those CDs out of the tower, put it into a device that plays CDs, and then listened to it?
A couple months back, but then I don't think it worked. It was on my laptop. I don't think it was working.
Okay. Why do you have this?
It's more sentimental value.
Are
than
you
anything.
Going to ever get rid of a CD tower?
No.
Why?
Because all of those CDs are like things that I find I hold dear.
Name one CD without looking at the CD tower. Tell me one CD that's actually in there right now.
I have a bunch of Beatles CDs.
Okay.
A few garbage CDs.
Okay.
Portishead. I actually on our overnight show from 2 to 5, Nick DiGilio show, we just did a whole show where we talked about our top, I think we did top 10, top 12 for some reason, top 12 albums that really meant to us, like had its significance in our lives. And all of the CDs or all of the records that I talked about are in that CD tower.
That's a lovely thought, and I do not apologize for making fun of your complete and utter pointlessness of owning that tower.
Go ahead. Keep making fun of me. It's sleek.
You know, it is not sleek. You know what could be really nice is if you framed some of those CD covers and then put them on your wall.
I don't really. I mean, I'm not really too into the artwork for some of them.
Then why keep it?
Because it's something, because when I see them, I think back, I'm like, oh, I remember this was the time and blah, 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 this happened or blah.
All right. Well, what was number one on your list?
Well, I went in chronological order pretty much.
That totally makes sense.
That's the only way I could think of it.
Yeah.
And so my first album was pretty much the first album I have memory of, which was Beatles Hard Day's Night. It's my dad's CD. That I took. So the one in there is my dad's. And yeah, I remember I used to dance wildly around to A Hard Day's Night. So that's the first one. And then the last one was Taking Back Sunday, Tell All Your Friends. And that's because that was a time in my life, that was college. So there's those memories attached to that album. And, you know, hanging out with you guys and with our mutual friend Matt Laporte and all that. It was a whole thing.
I'm not going to make fun of you for liking that record. My wife likes that record. You're both wrong, but it's an important record to both of you, and I get that. And the Beatles' memory is adorable, and I'm not going to make fun at all.
I mean, they all hold a significance in life. Like, that was a point in time something was happening or whatever.
Sure, but when is the last time you bought a record, like a CD?
Probably 2005, okay, 6.
So it's been roughly 10 years.
Yeah.
So there hasn't been one new CD in that tower for 10 years.
Yeah, there's some stuff that's been added, but it's all been free stuff that I've just acquired. But I myself have not bought one in a long time.
All right. Fine. I'm just trying. I don't understand this anymore. I don't even know why we're pretending to even make. Why do bands make CDs? Like, every one of our friends had a band. Every other one of our friends seemed to have had a band or has a band or whatever. Why are we? Why? What are we doing? This is stupid.
You know what? I'm supposed to go on tomorrow to a record release show, and they're releasing a cassette tape.
Yeah, I mean, those make sense. Those are actually just as about.
Oh,
just
okay.
No, I'm serious. Those make more sense because that's getting more in vogue. They're cheaper. They're smaller. It's easier to cart around if you're a band. You're more likely to sell it. You could package really cool artwork. Like, I get this tape at this point more than the CD.
Okay, so maybe I should bring along my empty cassette tape holder to see if anybody wants it at the show.
I bet you, yeah, I bet somebody would. I bet you could actually sell that tomorrow night at the show.
Oh, God. I'll have to post it on Craigslist.
I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying it's more valuable in 2016.
Right, which I think is funny.
It all loops back around, man.
Right, it's just going backwards. I mean, I'm, you know, who am I to talk? I think albums are neat.
Exactly.
And actually, that's where I'm going to head. I
want
to get
some of my vinyl?
I don't know, yes. I still don't have a record player.
Okay,
let me get there.
When I moved out of Chicago, like 5.5 years ago, I did a very half-assed piecemeal move, and I still had stuff in your apartment for about a year.
Yeah.
I offered you literally boxes of free vinyl, and you're like, I don't ever want that. I'm never going to do that. That's stupid.
Well, I don't think I still would want it because I don't have anywhere to play it. So I would just have boxes of vinyl just sitting there. Again, see? It would perpetuate my hoarding abilities of music.
Do you consider yourself a hoarder at this point?
No, because I'm not having to crawl through things.
Did you ever worry about that?
No.
Good.
No, because I can let go of things. If I sit down and I can let go of stuff that's silly.
I'm thinking about just completely getting rid of vinyl.
I mean, you could, and you could probably get it to a lot of good homes.
Yeah.
Or you could sell it. I mean, there's so many places now, and again, it's in demand.
It's weird because when I started, I only started because it was the cheap thing to do.
Right.
I started when we were, I think, 13, maybe 14. No, 13 for sure. I got it. I got my first record player and all that stuff at my junior high's, like, they had like a big garage sale, essentially a way for like everybody to clean money and then like give all the proceeds to like the teen club or some shit. So I got like a record player, like a full 70s thing for like free or $1 or $5 with like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great with like a handful of records. I want to say 5. And the only one I remember is ZZ Top's Fandango. Which has LaGrange on it, which is an amazing song. And it's not a horrible record, but like that's why I had so many Doors records and so many Beatles records and so many Zeppelin records, because you could get them all for 50 cents. And then by the time we were out of high school and in college, it started to get back in vogue. And like now, it's just, I don't, like, Saki doesn't even, they have CDs, but no one buys CDs. They just sell vinyl. And Reckless is more vinyl than CD. I feel like I wasted so much money on all of this product.
On the vinyl? Well, I mean, you can sell it.
Yeah, but it's more about, like, lugging it around.
You could, I'm sure you could sell it online.
I've sold a lot of it already, too. And I'm not doing piecemeal online. Did I ever tell you I paid my rent for a while selling books online?
I could believe it.
When I had, when I worked promotions and I would have to, like, deliver stuff, I would see wherever there'd be, like, library or college or estate, like, book sales. So I would buy, like, it'd be me and, like, retirees at, like, noon in Evanston. And I would buy, like, garbage bags full of, like, first edition plays that they were throwing out. I sold one, like, French play for, I want to say, $400.
Oh, wow.
Just because, like, on Amazon. But it got to the point where, like, I became a hoarder of, like, vintage books. And our entire storage space were, like, was, like, essentially my Amazon catalog of every single book. And then I think there's like a few thousand books down there. So I just had to get rid of that because that's a horrible vicious cycle that no one in their 20s should do.
Well, I mean, I know I have a friend who sells things through eBay and Amazon and he makes a living off of it. I mean, he does research and things, but he mainly buys from online Goodwill and stuff like that, and these weird warehouse kind of online stores where they'll sell you a bunch of CDs for like a dollar. And then he gets them and then he sells them online. He was actually, because he's in England, he was actually sending, I was kind of his courier for a while, and he was sending me stuff because it would be cheaper to send it to me here in the States and then to him rather than over to England from here. Through these companies because it would be they make it more expensive.
Why was he doing it? I mean, like, clearly you're making money on it, but you can make a lot of money doing a lot of things. Did he enjoy it?
I mean, he didn't. He's been doing it for so long that he now has tricks and he knows how to get the most money. Like, he knows how to make a good living off of it now. To the point where he lives pretty minimally, but he would come here like every 6 months and stay in Chicago for a month just to hang out. And he was able to because he would make enough money during holidays and all the months before that.
Did he specialize? Like, was it just music?
No, he did. He did a lot of box sets, DVD box sets, kind of stuff like that. But he had CDs. He sold a lot to... I guess Europe and Asia. Because they're like crazy collectors of weird stuff over there.
This is both incredibly fascinating to me and very, very scary. Because this guy was what, like in his 20s, 30s?
He's a little older than us.
Okay.
So he's like 35, 36.
Okay, barely. So yeah, 30s. How does it end? Does he just do this forever?
I mean, it's allowing him to live how he wants to because he can do it wherever.
Sure. I don't know. It both makes me very excited and very scared because I could totally see myself doing this. But I don't know. I don't think I'd be happy.
Right. I mean, he's been doing it for so long that he knows how to. He just doesn't blindly buy things. He has ways to look stuff up and to see if it will actually make him any money and this and that.
Now I'm just thinking about, like, collecting and how I'm trying to get further and further and further away from it.
Yeah. I mean, living minimally is kind of nice. It is. I don't buy that many books. Very rarely do I buy books. So I go to the library, and right now I have on hold. I don't know when I'll get it, but it's called The Art of... I forget what it is. The Art of Minimalism or something like that. It's some like way to, you're supposed to declutter your house.
Got it.
And it's this weird thing of like, you take all your clothes, like you deal with one, you don't deal by rooms, you deal with like all your clothes and you look at each one and you ask yourself, does it make you happy?
Oh yeah. I do that all the time. Like the shirt I'm currently wearing, I haven't worn in a year, and I pulled it out of the back of the closet just so I could like get it back into rotation. And that's the good part about working out is every single t-shirt you ever have, like, you now have a reason to wear it out, and like, okay, this good shirt has now become a workout shirt, and this workout shirt that won't be not smelly is going to get thrown away. Like, you've literally used it to the point where it's falling apart or it's no longer good for human consumption.
Right. I mean, I have a box. This is bad because you're not supposed to do this. But I have a box of clothes that don't fit, but I feel like at some point I can fit into them, so I keep them. And because I think they're cute and I don't want anyone else to wear them.
So they're aspirational clothes.
Yes, but people, but the whole thinking is you shouldn't do that. You should just have clothes that fit you well and this and that, and you shouldn't worry about, or you shouldn't have clothes that be like, one day I'll fit into them.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on how many clothes. Are you buying extra wardrobes because there's a goal weight you're trying to hit, or is it just like...
No, this is stuff that I've worn, that I've had, and they don't fit anymore, but I'm like, oh no, this is still nice. I like it. So I'm going to keep it for myself until I can fit into it again.
Will you set a timeline for...
No. Oh. Some of that's been in there for years.
Well, that's different.
But it still holds up. So I'm like, no, I want to keep it.
All right. That's a little slippery slope shit right there.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the back of the closet where I don't even look at the stuff. So I looked at it once to go through it and see what I could get rid of. Like, that I didn't like.
What's your oldest piece of clothing that's still in rotation?
I have a shirt from... Well, this is pajamas. These I use as pajamas. It's a shirt from 19-something or other, 1990... I'm going to say 97. It's... I won it online through AOL... through an AOL chat room called the Entertainment Asylum. And they would do movie trivia in a live chat.
Okay.
And I won. I won, like, maybe I got second or third or fifth or something like that. And they sent me a t-shirt.
What does the t-shirt say?
It just has their logo on it.
The Entertainment Asylum logo?
Yeah. Which is just like, it was just like a person, like, bent to it. It kind of looked like an Oscar.
The Entertainment Asylum debuted on October
27th, 1997. Yeah, there you go. See? So 90, probably 98 maybe then.
Wow. This is...
But it was an AOL channel.
Want to throw in a quick plug here before we get to talk about Drag Race. Esmeralda and I will be at the Hungry Brain hosting You, Me, Them, Everybody Live on Thursday, May 26th. It's our first show at the Hungry Brain, 2319 West Belmont. In about 18 months, the Hungry Brain closed. It's reopened, and we're very, very happy to be going back there. El Scorch, current cover boy of the Chicago Reader, is our musical guest. Meredith Ketchell will be there. You've heard her on this program before. Lots of other friends. It's going to be very fun. I'm very excited to do that. So, one final plug. Thursday, May 26th, You Mean Everybody Live returns to the Hungry Brain. Here's some talk about Drag Race.
But no, I think it's either going to be Bob the drag queen or Kimchi.
Oh, clearly.
So I feel like Naomi Smalls can't even. It's like, whatever.
Yeah,
you're pretty.
That being said, if Naomi wins, like, it's not the worst thing.
No, but I'll feel like it's another Tyra. What's her face?
To be fair, Tyra was like season one.
No, she wasn't.
Was it season two? That was
two or three.
I thought it was like super early.
Season one was BB Zahara Benet.
Oh, yeah.
From Cameroon.
I don't know if it's still rumor or if it's confirmed, but they're talking about a second season of All Stars.
Yeah. No, I would love that. Are you kidding? No, I love when all the older drag queens come back. Older. I mean, when, you know, the past.
The
drag
men
queen.
That are younger than us come back.
I mean, some of them are older, but some of them are... Some are younger, but some are old as hell.
Chad Michaels already won. Like, that's it.
Oh, that's true. Do you feel like they just gave it to him because they're like, all right, Chad.
Oh, if you believe that, stop watching because Chad would have won any other season but Sharon Needles.
He's too much with the Cher thing.
Okay, I agreed with you until you watch All-Stars. And it's clear that, like, oh, motherfucker could do anything. That's just one thing he can do.
I forget who I was.
I think you need to apologize. Well, if you're anything like me, you were rooting for Latrice Royale and All-Stars. Latrice Royale should have won All-Stars, but Latrice Royale should have won everything because as a person, Latrice Royale is like the most rootable person on the entire, like, nine seasons of the show.
Right. Yes.
Latrice is the best. And, like, you want her to be your friend.
Oh, no, for sure.
And it's not like just looks or just comedy or just whatever. Probably the most well-rounded, no pun intended, queen of all time.
I would have liked Raven.
Raven is great, but Raven's not nearly as complete.
Okay.
So Kelsey and I are completely caught up with it. And since we like binge watched everything, we're so like RuPaul like craving. We're now almost done with every single one of her podcasts that she does with Miss Elvishage.
Mm-hmm.
And we are currently watching Skin Wars.
You should watch. She should try to find her. Do you remember when RuPaul had a talk show?
Yes, I fucking do. And there's only like shitty, like low res clips on VH1. But I remember that when it was like, I would see it in passing.
Yeah, I used to watch that. That was great.
You know what else VH1 did that was really great? I don't know if you ever saw it. Was the Zach Galifianakis talk show.
I saw bits and pieces. I never sat down to actually watch the whole thing.
I remember watching it live when we were in the dorms our freshman year, and Eels were the musical guests. So it was like January of 2002. It was awesome.
I think I saw them.
The band?
Yeah, I saw them around that time because our friend Matt was into them. And I had like peripherally, you know, I knew Novocaine for the Soul and all that kind of stuff. So I went with him. So I went to go see the Eels.
Eels are one of my favorite bands. I did an interview with Mark Thomas Everett, who is E in the Eels, like the guy that writes all the songs and does everything. One of the worst interviews I've ever done.
Oh, no. Does he not talk?
Yeah, it was very not fun. It was a lot of one-word answers. That being said, I saw him the same night I saw Lydia Loveless. So there are two clubs in Washington, D.C. booked by the same people. One is called 930 Club. Think of the Metro. And then the other one is Lincoln Theater. And that's a 1,200-seat theater, so the exact same capacity. But the show at the 930 Club – these venues are three blocks away, by the way. The show at 930 Club was awesome. It was Lydia Loveless, who I don't know if you know, but I think you really would dig her. I love her. She's on Bloodshot. It's a great label. And she was opening for the Old 97s. The Old 97s are this fun American, like, country, but American, like, Tom Petty-ish country. So it's really great. It's a lot of fun. So I interviewed her as well, and they happened to be playing the same night. We had a great interview, had a ball. She knew who James Fritz is, so we bonded over that.
Right. He loves her. I've seen posts from him that he's just in love with her.
So Lydia and I hit it off, but I also had tickets to Eels, so... Kelsey and I go see Lydia Loveless. We have a fucking blast. And then we're like, you know what? I got these Eels tickets, and there's rumors that Steve Perry from Journey is going to show up. So we're like, fuck it. Let's go to see the Eels at the Lincoln Theater. We make it for just the encore. He comes out and plays one of my favorite songs with Steve Perry from Journey.
Nice.
And I literally three songs back to 930 Club to see the Old 97s. Kelsey and I had such a good time watching Lydia Loveless, and we had been drinking at this point. I was like, you know what? I've never actually done this, but I still have Lydia's phone number. I feel like it'd be okay to text her because I'm with my wife and I'm not trying to sleep with her. So I'm like, hey, this is really weird, and I've never done this before, but do you want to have a cigarette? Because I knew she smoked. And she's like, yeah, totally, let's do it. And I was like, I'm outside. She's like, so am I. So then I realized after the fact that I text her, I'm like, me saying, like, hey, I've never done this. I'm with my wife. Do you want a blank? Actually sounds like I want a threesome. It would have been way better if it's just being like, hey, I interviewed you. Great. So you want to have a drink next door? Because they do have a drink next door. We ended up talking for maybe an hour, the three of us. It was so much fun. That's how I envision Lydia Loveless. There's no real point to that story other than Latrice Royale is the shit.
Are you BFFs now with Lydia Lovelace?
No, we're fine. I don't think we've talked since.
Aww.
No, she's great. You know what's really bad is, like, I haven't seen her show since, and she's been in town maybe 3 times.
Oh, no!
So, D.C. is a lot different than Chicago. For some reason, like, I know where you live. You're about 7 miles from the Empty Bottle. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Okay. I live 3 miles from Rock and Roll Hotel. It would take you less time for you to get to the Empty Bottle than it would for me to get to the Rock and Roll Hotel.
Because of windy streets?
Because of windy streets. You can't walk there. The bus takes forever. If you bike there, it's not safe because of construction and stuff. So, like,
why can't you walk there?
You can't walk there because you go through this weird industrial area and it actually takes longer. There's no good direct way. It's really bad. Anyways, therefore, and because I'm in my 30s now, I'm not going to spend an hour getting to a show unless it's my fucking show.
That's a long time.
I know that sounds like selfish and stuff, but like,
that stops me from going to a lot of things where I'm like, oh God, that's like very far. And by the time I get there and then having to get back, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because I was spoiled in Chicago and like the red line's 24 hours and the blue line's 24 hours. And like, worst comes to worst, like you just walk a few miles and it's not that bad. But like, at this point, I'm just too fucking old and I don't care enough. And every time Lydia Lovelace is playing, it's usually on 8th Street, which is 3 miles away. Or, like, it's Monday and I don't want to be at a show at midnight.
Right. You should have just texted your BFF and been like, hey, Lydia. Hey, Liddy.